As I mentioned earlier, the title and the theme I gave for the day was Attachment and Letting Go. And it's a very much central theme of meditation practice and very much at the heart of what I think we're most interested in, to understand the process of letting go is that which actually frees the heart, that allows us to find the peace, the well-being, the sense of fulfillment or happiness in life that we perhaps look for, yearn for. It doesn't come from the habitual orientation that we can find ourselves having towards gaining, towards accumulating, towards acquiring. And when I mentioned at the beginning of the morning about just noticing what one might have come here for, can sometimes be a sense of, you know, I'd really like to feel calm. I'd really hope to resolve something that's difficult for me, or become a good meditator. All of which is really okay, appropriate as a sense of an aspiration, a sense of an orientation of what draws or attracts us. And yet, very easily what happens is we become fixed on how we believe or imagine that should happen, or how it will, an idea of how that will look if it does happen, that limits us from being able to really fully engage with and receive what is happening. So there's a way in which we're here involved in meditation practice as a vehicle for understanding, as a vehicle for transformation. And essentially understanding the truth of experience is what allows us to let go of the ways we might be engaging with life that are not in accordance with its deepest truth. And so this experience and orientation we can probably, I guess, most of us recognize as a sense of wanting to get, wanting to have, a sense of demanding or believing that things must be a certain way. So many ways that can occur for us. This, although it appears to be what motivates us perhaps in practice at times, or to, and it can be what brings us to engage in wholesome ways, so it's not something to be absolutely discounted, there's a way in which it also creates a very fundamental conflict in the heart and in the life that we experience when things are not as we wish them to be, when we don't show up the way we would have liked to show up, when our body isn't calm and comfortable and pleasurable to sit with for half an hour, and sometimes it isn't, or when our mind isn't steady and clear and bright and focused and mindful and alert the way we might hope that it would be. And, you know, it's an understandable wish and hope, because actually if the body's not comfortable at ease and the body's not bright and clear and steady, then it can be quite unpleasant sitting in meditation for half an hour or more, or walking back and forth for 15 or 20 minutes. It can be quite challenging. It's not like we come here thinking, God, I haven't got enough difficult things in my life, I'll go and do a day of meditation, that should sort it out. Some extra discomfort and things that feel a bit sort of wobbly or out of control, that's what I need. We don't usually come along thinking in that way, at least I don't. And yet sometimes it's what we encounter. So there's in terms of just reflecting on this, that way in which we expect things to be a certain way, demand of ourselves or of others or of life things to be a certain way, we talk about this as attachment. the way in which we become fixed upon, fixated upon certain circumstances being just so and not otherwise. And in the Buddha's teaching, this is recognized as really being the basis of suffering, the way in which we become entangled with life, and the way in which we come to experience our life as feeling kind of bound or limited. There's a certain binding effect that happens when the mind takes hold of a position and demands that it must be so. And in seeing that, equally, there's the understanding and very foundational teaching within the Buddha's teaching, in which we recognize that letting go of attachment, releasing that habitual grabbing hold of, fixating upon, demanding, and the pressure that it generates upon us, equally as upon others, that letting that go is something transformative and liberating, and is very much the foundation of the freedom that we seek and that teachers and teachings throughout the ages have pointed us to and spoken of. Now, it's something that isn't so popular in our culture generally, the idea that letting go, having less, not getting it the way I want it, might actually be liberating. That doesn't really work that well if you're trying to sell people things, because it wouldn't encourage them to buy them. Now, that's not the only thing that's going on in our culture, but actually it's a large part of what the fundamental orientation and energy of the activity going on is to do with producing and consuming. Doing more of that, and you know, when the economy is not doing so well, we're told we need to do more of it, and that'll get the economy going. You know, even if you don't really want those things, buy them anyway because it's good for the economy, and then we'll all be better off. It's very interesting how that kind of attitude is so pervasive. And you know, I don't imagine this is news to you. You wouldn't have been coming along here to a day of meditation if you thought the way to liberation was through having more things, because you probably accurately spotted that you weren't going to get too many things here. Hmm? I won't disappoint you in that regard. And so, it can sometimes seem kind of almost puritanical, like we're depriving ourselves to not be trying to get what we want, to actually be just receiving what is, just acknowledging how things are. Kind of stepping back from that compelling urge to pursue. That comes with it, or that carries with it, a sense of potential, the sense of if only this, and then somehow my life would be complete, fulfilled, happy, at peace. We can recognize the tendency of attachment in the mind when an orientation towards something, of which there can be many wholesome orientations in the sense of seeking to develop, to cultivate, to support something, all of that can be really wholesome. But when we add to it, and we might not articulate it, but when there's a sense that comes with it, and when that is fulfilled, when I can sit without moving for 40 minutes, then, and there's a sense of like, it's all going to be great, it's all going to be wonderful, I'm going to have got there, done it, become the great meditator, or whatever it is, that we kind of add to the sense of what can even be a very wholesome orientation to develop a meditation practice, which could be really useful, beneficial, supportive, of course. Wouldn't be doing this if that wasn't the case. But a sense of that in itself will somehow, if I can do it or get it or fix it, that will somehow give me something more than just what that experience is. It will bring somehow completion, fulfillment, the end of having to, you know. Do you notice sometimes when you're thinking, and the thought was, well, I shouldn't really be thinking so much, I'm supposed to be meditating, but if I can just figure this out, then I'll let it go. Do you ever have that kind of thought? You know, if I can just answer, remember that thing I need to remember, or work out how to do this thing I need to do, then I can stop thinking. And it's like there's this promise that if I just engage a bit more, I'll come to the end of that process. But what we notice is if we feed, or if we just allow that activity without containing or checking its momentum, as soon as we've figured out that thing, the mind pops up with one more thing that I now need to figure out, and then I can stop. It doesn't work that way. We don't come to the end of that movement by attempting to fulfill it and complete it and get better at it. We actually come to the end of that movement by recognizing that it's driven by a promise that it never fulfills. And that's something we have to explore experientially. It's not something we can kind of just hear about and think, oh yeah, that makes sense, I'll stop doing that. Or else meditation would be easy, wouldn't it? We'd say, oh okay, I think I'll just take 30 minutes where I won't do any thinking and I'll just be mindful. And it would happen, wouldn't it? It'd be nice. But it isn't actually what most people report. I mean, if that's what happened for you, maybe, you know, great. But it's not normally what I hear about when I talk with people with regard to their practice. Huh? Now, it's important in this that we are kindly with regard to our experience and ourselves and seeing how that happens. It's not supposed to be different than the way it happens. But we can understand this process in such a way as to transform it. And part of it is actually making a little bit more explicit the reality of what I'm speaking about here as attachment. Now, it's useful and important here. Attachment doesn't get a lot of good press in Buddhist circles, understandably. It's the cause of suffering. It's the thing you've got to deal with. But we need to really be clear to distinguish that from the way the word attachment can be used in psychological understanding and practice, where it's referring to something different. Attachment is actually the wholesome and incredibly necessary connection that develops between an infant and the primary mothering person, which is often the mother but not always. And there's a very clear recognition that this is something needed for healthy development of the human being. And so I'm not, and I am confident the Buddha wasn't suggesting that that was a bad idea when suggesting that attachment is what causes suffering. But understanding the nature of what's being meant and the use of the language, if I translate it, again, rather than using attachment for that, it's about a secure sense of connection in which there's a certain degree of trust and a certain degree of actually openness and intimacy. And interestingly, those kind of qualities are ones rather similar to what we learn to develop in meditation. But just wanting to say that with regard to those of you who will have encountered the word attachment in different contexts. In the way it's used there, it's not a problem. In fact, its absence is a problem. But in the Buddhist teaching, in the language, what we're talking about here, attachment is something slightly different, or very different, in fact. And again, it's that sense of having somehow, consciously or unconsciously, assumed that some circumstance or thing will be the fulfillment of my life. Or, the way it turns up the other way, is that something in itself will be the bar to fulfillment in my life. So we can get attached to, I need to have this thing. We might think, I don't know, a nice pair of shoes. You know, and we think, wow, if I have, I'll be warm, comfortable, supported, they'll look good. You know, we can really think, wow, these are the things that will do it for me. Now, simplistic example. Probably that doesn't happen to too many of us here. At least not for too long before we realize, oh, actually, no, shoes aren't going to do that for me. But there can be that sense of, I need to have this. It can equally come in the terms of, actually, I've got to fix this. This thing, you know, those shoes that I bought, actually, they're the problem. You know, I can't walk properly. They look kind of rough. People probably think I'm a bit weird wearing them. You know, somehow we make something into the problem. I'm not sure that's a great example, but somehow it came into my head. I was talking about shoes this morning. That's probably it. I just spotted where that came from. I have kind of wide feet, and so getting shoes that fit is hard work. That's what we were talking about this morning. And so one could have the sense, oh, these shoes, they're too tight. That's the problem. Huh? And we make something into the problem, rather than, sure, if I can get a you can get shoes that fit your feet, great, no problem with that. But imagining that this particular uncomfortable circumstance is the problem, that somehow that is why I'm not happy, because my feet hurt, or because they don't have enough space, you know. We're more likely to do that with, you know, I'm not happy because of something a bit more significant in our life. We might imagine that, you know, the way our relationships or our family or our job or our home circumstances are, that that is the problem, maybe. And if I could fix that, or my mind, if I could at least get my mind to be quiet and clear and calm, then that would be the solution. And in a way, again, we get attached to a sense of needing it to be different. Rather than wanting a certain circumstance, it's simply a not wanting of a different circumstance. And both those forms or expressions of attachment, what they do is they put us into a relationship with experience where we're looking at it as if it has the capacity to either give us or prevent us from having satisfaction, happiness, peace, freedom, whatever it is that we're really looking for in our hearts and in our lives. And this is the way in which we become caught in and bound by the experiences, because then it requires us, in order to find satisfaction, happiness, peace, to be able to to control them. Because if our happiness and peace is dependent upon them being a certain way, then we need to control them in order to produce this. And what we see, if we really look at our experiences, that we can't control experience. That's one of the things we learn in meditation. That's one of the things that if you did it for the first time today, you would have, I imagine, noticed that you can't, and we can't, get our mind to do what we tell it to, or our body. Certainly not all of the time, and sometimes not very much of the time. And there's a kind of a usefully embarrassing sort of humility in seeing that actually, even in this most close to what I imagine myself to be experience of my thoughts and my feelings and my bodily experience, it feels so much me, I can't get that to be the way I want it to be. And if I can't do that, how much chance, how much hope have I got of getting the world to meet up with the idea of how I think it should be? And yet, so far as we spend our time and our energy primarily oriented towards trying to make that happen, we become bound in the world, whether the outer world or the inner world, and we, in a way, very easily fail to see that that way of engaging isn't leading us where we want it to go. Because somehow there's this sense of, I just need to do it a bit better or a bit harder or get a bit more. So I've got a good job, I just need a better one. Or I've got a good partner, but I just need to get them to be a little bit different than they are. You know, good luck on that one. Or, you know, my meditation's doing okay, but if I could just sit for a little bit longer or be a bit clearer, you know? That way, it's quite seductive, but compelling. And always that sense of, if I could, and it's almost like we never actually say or let ourselves see what it is that we're imagining would happen then. It's like we're drawn forward. It's sort of kind of, we could say, seductive or enchanting, in a way. And that movement that is drawn out of us. And yet, if that were possible for us, it would have happened by now. If we were able to get it together in such a way that we could really say, yeah, this is going to be how I wanted it, and it's going to be that way, we'd have done it by now. We could have stopped, put our feet up, and said, "Ah, great, got there." The fact that we haven't, if we see it truly and clearly, does not mean we haven't tried hard enough. We've all tried incredibly hard to get this sorted. But what it is speaking to us is that, or telling us is that actually, this is not the pathway to what it claims to be. It's not the way. The pursuit of experience is not the path. And that letting go of our demand that things be a certain way, and freeing up the space and the time and the energy that's otherwise committed to trying to make that so, this is actually the context in which we can begin to reorient our life towards freedom. And to really understand, to know directly for ourselves the peace that is possible for a human being to know in the heart, in the mind, in the body. So practice is not like coming on a day like this, or a retreat, or engaging meditation. It's not like going to the shop where we're going to get some nice things. As Jack Kornfield, one of the teachers of this tradition, senior elders of our community, he once observed, it's not like going to the store or shop. He said, this is going to the dump, where the invitation is really to let go of the things we don't really need to be carrying with us. It's usually not quite so enthusiastically looked forward to, a trip to the dump, as a trip to the shop where we might find some nice things. And yeah, when we take a few things to the dump and get rid of them, hopefully we can recycle a few of them. What we find is there's more space. And it's often the space that we're really looking for. We got enough things already. Outside things, material things, inner things going on. There's enough of those. Plenty. It's actually the space that we're looking for. So one thing we can ask ourselves in the context of the practice is, what are we feeding here? What are we giving support to in the way we engage in practice? Are we supporting a sense of openness to how things are? Or are we feeding a sense of the demand or the pressure for things to be a certain way? It's a simple question, it's not an easy one. Probably we'll find a mixture of both, most of us. But to really notice what happens when we can allow things to be as they are, when we can release the urge, the compulsion, the tendency to place that pressure upon the world, upon our experience, upon ourselves. How painful that is. How painful that is. To conceive of ourselves as somehow other than as we should be. As if this that we are is not okay. How painful that is. And how unnecessary. So let's take a little more time for some walking. And the walking again, really seeing what's possible for you and just letting yourself walk. Not getting anything out of this. There's nothing here for that acquisitive, accumulating, materialist kind of orientation that we find ourselves sometimes in. And yet see, even with that, if we can really be wholeheartedly here. In the walking back and forth, to and fro. And then we'll come back again in 20 minutes. So it,